Good morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Matinair on Air. My name is Greg Bach. I am sitting in for Jane Matinair, who is on vacation, and we welcome you to the show and wish all of you a happy, healthy, and safe Labor Day. We've got a great episode for you today, so kick back and enjoy these interviews that we have done with labor leaders from all over Wisconsin. So happy Labor Day, and take care. I want to welcome our guest, Organizing Director for the Wisconsin Education Association Council, also known as WEAC, my friend Kristen Lighty. Kristen, welcome to Matinair on Air. Thank you so much for being on the show. How are you doing today?
Good. Thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
You know, when we were talking about our Labor Day episode, I was like, you know, I know people in unions. I want to talk to them. And you are literally the first person I think of when I think about unions.
And I am honored by that.
And we are comedy buddies. And the fact that, like, when I think unions, I think Kristen Lighty. And then a whole new, like, version of you comes to play. Like, when we're hanging out at the club, I'm like, it's fun. We're cracking jokes. But when I think of union Kristen, I'm like, different Kristen.
Yeah, a lot of people that I work with, when they find out I do comedy, there is a moment of, oh, you do comedy? Like, which, you know, I prefer to keep those two lives separate because we don't want the lady telling drinking stories helping us with our FMLA, you know.
It is always the worst day at work when they find out you do stand-up because they come up to me like, we found out you do stand-up. You're like, can I just quit or can you fire me right now, please? Thank you very much.
Actually, I will say, you know, once it got out, all the people I work with have been really supportive and come out to shows, and it's been pretty awesome.
I love that. That's fantastic. So, we'll talk about comedy in a little bit, but what I really wanted to talk to you about is your work in the labor organizing world, and give me a brief overview of what WEAC does.
Yeah. And I think, you know, part of the most exciting area of work that we do is post Act 10. I don't want to go into a huge historical lesson here, but we had some pretty devastating legislation that ruined public sector unions in 2011, thanks to Scott Walker. Boo. During that time, I had just started becoming an organizer in Chicago. I grew up in Green Bay, but headed to Chicago to get an education on how to organize, how to do this union work. And around 2017, 18, after the Trump election, I started paying more attention to what was happening in Wisconsin. And this cultural shift is more going from becoming a service model union to an organizing model union within WEAC, which means we have engaged, informed members that are ready to act through collective actions to defend the goals that they want to achieve for their students and their fellow staff. To me, that's very exciting. And we've done a lot of work to let members know their rights, how to build their unions, how to effectively go after the goals they want to achieve, even though we are limited by these laws from Scott Walker about collective bargaining. But I'm of the opinion, you know, we can still influence decision makers to achieve goals. It's just not enshrined in a contract. So the way that the union operates looks differently, but we can still build power. What our power looks like now is showing up to meetings, showing up through petitions, basically doing anything to show the decision makers in a district that either this isn't right, this isn't what we want, or yeah, we're on board with this. We have also done actions to show support for things. So yeah, I help educators. Number one, when they have a problem, they'll call in. And then we figure out, is this an issue that affects a lot of people? Do people feel strongly about it? Is it something we can mobilize around? So I help educators create strategic plans to achieve the goals they want to see.
What's interesting that you mentioned Act 10, and you're right, we don't have, we need a whole other four shows to talk about Act 10 and its devastating effect on our teachers and our educational system here in the state. And really what it did was, I mean, correct me if I am wrong, but one of the major things it did was rob our teachers of their collective bargaining abilities. So now it's just there. I mean, I don't even know what the process is now, like as far as like, you know, discussing for raises and discussing for more funding. It seems like when we're talking about funding, it's always now being put on the ballots for the taxpayers to take care of. And it's always being, you know, and if you want to talk about teachers getting raises, it creates arguments when really, and I don't know if this would be still the case if Act 10 was still around, because teachers would be able to bargain for their rights to have raises and to have good working conditions. And that's gone now.
Yes. So as of now, post Act 10, teachers can only negotiate up to the inflation increase each year. which in the past has been minuscule, you know, like 0.12%, things of that nature. And even the way that that base wage is configured differs from district to district. So some districts want to say you can get the CPI increase on the starting wage of the district. So the very bottom rung of the salary schedule, that is what you are getting 0.12% of for your yearly increase. I think we've done a really good job of changing that conversation to mean, no, you get CPI increase on your actual wages, because unless we're doing that, you'll always be under inflation and you'll never keep up with real wages.
Am I hearing that correctly? If someone who's been teaching for a while wants to negotiate a raise, they not only have to negotiate on the inflation rate, but also on the inflation rate as according to new teachers. Am I hearing that right?
You are. Yes. Some districts are unwilling to budge in their calculation of base wage. It was a formula Scott Walker created in the first year of Act 10, which has since expired and never been renewed. But some districts really feel that this is what we need to stick to because it saves them a ton of money. And that's where we see districts just losing educators left and right.
Well, and that's another thing, you know, I would like to get your thoughts on too is, you know, after, and I was working in the public sector, I was working in local government when Act 10 and 32 came down, and it actually affected us as well. I got a 2.6% raise to deal with a 5.2% pay cut because of that. And I remember from my experience in public service, as far as local government, the amount of people who came through and just flat out turned their retirement papers in within the first month or two of that was, I mean, they couldn't keep up with all the people filing for retirement. I mean, I'm sure you must have seen the same thing after that as well with the teachers.
Yeah, I didn't come on with WEAC until around 2018. But it's by design, right? Every employer wants to get rid of those long-term veteran employees who are making more and bring in cheaper labor force. That's just bosses 101, really.
Well, and I mean, are the teachers really making as much as the bosses want us to think? I mean, I know that some teachers can make a good amount of money if they continue education. They've been doing it for a long time. But we're not talking about people who are clearing, you know, $500,000 a year. They're not like, they're not living the lifestyle on a boat somewhere in the South Pacific. They're teachers.
Yeah. You know, most districts have eliminated additional pay for higher education as well. So that's pretty much a thing of the past in most of our districts. I would say, you know, starting people are probably around 40 to 50,000. And, you know, that's kind of the weaponized guilt that's always been used against teachers is like, you're not in it for the money. You're in it to help kids. So, you know, you should be grateful you get a salary at all. And actually, there is such a long history of sexism within teaching as a profession. Some of our contracts on file from, you know, the 80s, I've looked over and they even explicitly state you are not the primary breadwinner. That's why you don't receive a living wage. In the 1980s, they said this.
But Kristen, I thought we solved all the problems in the 80s. Yeah, that's what I expected. Now, you didn't come on to WEAC till 2018, but I mean, you are so, as you said, you were looking at contracts from the 80s. Are there other states that have this sort of model or trying to do this model? I mean, I don't know of here. I don't hear of other states having what seems to be the same problems. I know there's, of course, funding issues in every state. There's, of course, teachers paying out of their own pocket. But as far as like the union issues, do other states have the same challenges that you're facing and the teachers are facing?
Yeah, I would say right to work is pretty prevalent throughout the country. You know, there are some places that have managed to keep their unions safe, like Illinois, you got the East Coast, places like that. I mean, right to work is a strategic formula from the right wing to decimate unions and strip us of our funding, basically. What's unique about Wisconsin is that since we don't have contracts, there is no duty of representation to protect the contract. So in Wisconsin, if a non-member is facing disciplinary action, and, you know, suddenly they're like, oh, no, I need help. And I recognize that the union is important. We don't have to represent them because there's no contract to defend. So in a way, that kind of makes it a little easier than other right to work states where you know, staff is just really strapped trying to defend the contract for a bunch of people that aren't paying their dues.
I mean, this to say uphill battle is probably very much an understatement to you, and I don't want to come off sounding uneducated on that matter, but like when you talk about it, it really then makes me think of all of those teachers who are still teaching to this day, who've been doing it for so long. And I wouldn't like it if someone said to me, you don't do it for the money, you do it for the love of education, but you also want to do it because you want to feel valued. And that's just, they are part of that group of individuals who we as a country love to hold up as the heroes, and we, you know, they're shaping the young minds, but it's like, hey, can they get some more money? Can they just get a little raise? Well, no, because they're takers and they should be doing it for the love and not for the money. And that just is crazy to me, but.
Yeah. COVID really pointed out too, that public schools, public education is one of the last social safety nets in this country, and we got to fight for it. We got to protect it. I know I was painting it all kind of doom and gloom, but I think it's a very exciting time in Wisconsin right now. You know, over the last 6 years, we've flipped the governor's seat. We've flipped the state superintendent. We flipped the state Supreme Court. We've got our maps redrawn. WEAC has recently launched a lawsuit against Act 10 to repeal, hopefully, all of it. But who knows how that'll go. But as of July, the judge issued a statement that he heard oral arguments and found that the case has merit to move forward, that you can't treat one group of public sector workers different than another. And, you know, since the first time since Act 10, our union has grown. So I think we are, you know, putting things together after Act 10 and realizing what we need to be doing. And we're on that path.
Stick around for more with Kristen Leidy as we continue this conversation about WEAC and the teachers union in Wisconsin. Don't go anywhere. Stay close. Happy Labor Day. You're listening to Matt and Air on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to Matt and Air on Air. My name is Greg Bach, and this is our Labor Day edition. We got more of our interview with Kristen Leidy coming ahead. But first, before we get into that, I just want to remind everyone that you can listen to our shows anytime you want by going to civicmedia.us, clicking the show tab, going to Matt and Air on Air, and downloading our shows as a podcast. If you don't want to do that, you can go to your favorite podcast distribution center of choice, and you can find us by searching the name Matt and Air on Air. You can download the episodes, listen to us anytime. But more importantly, you can subscribe to us as a show. And if you're feeling like we're doing a great job, leave us a 5-star review, because those reviews help us drive the show up to the top of the chart. So if you want to listen to us anytime, download us as a podcast, subscribe to this podcast, and leave us a review. Tell your friends as well. And you can always get in touch with us by emailing the show, janesays@civicmedia.us. And now back to our interview with union organizer and stand-up comedian, Kristen Leidy. We're speaking with organizing director Kristen Leidy, working for the Wisconsin Education Association Council, also known as WEAC. Now, Kristen, I know that summertime can be, you know, a downtime for teachers. Is that the fact for you? Are you keeping busy in the summertime? What are you up to as an organizer in the industry, as you would call it?
Yeah, summer is actually our busiest time of year. It's our go time. You know, it's the time of year where educators actually have a little time to themselves to put the thought into building their union that they really don't have so much during the year. So over the summer, I work with six teams and I help them create plans to recruit members, people who have been employed in their district for a while that they want to reach out to about joining their union, or also create plans to welcome the new hires to the district and explain to them kind of like what's going on in the district, what the union does, what the union's role is, and how they can be a part of that. We're always especially looking for new educators to be part of the union because they face way different challenges than our veteran educators. Especially now, a lot of people are coming in on emergency licenses and they're just being kind of tossed into it. And, you know, they need that mentorship from our more veteran teachers. So actually, it's also kind of a fun time of year because we plan, like with Oshkosh, we planned a volleyball social. So we're like out there diving for balls. and it's a good time. We get to know each other as people before we have to head into more tense situations together.
Now, as I mentioned before, during in the earlier segment, Kristen and I do have a relationship as far as comedy goes. We are friends in the comedy. We're friends. I mean, that's just it.
Like, we're real friends.
And honestly, in comedy, when you are in that world, you have comedy friends. And those are the people you see at the shows, at the open mics, at the events, whatnot. But then you have friends. And I consider Kristen a friend. And I feel very, very lucky about that. But Kristen, It's such a hoax. I already know the answer because I do it. But like the balancing of like having a job like yours, which is, I mean, organizing director for a major union in Wisconsin and also having time to travel to do comedy. I mean, you just recorded a record, Disassociation Vacation, available now. How do you do it?
August is hard. I don't know. I'm hanging on by a thread. I think I've been lucky in that I'm able to balance work and comedy because work takes me a lot of places. So I always try to see, like, is there a comedy scene there? Mm-hmm. Like I've had to go to Austin for work, different places. And comedy, if you've got a good reputation, you're able to network. So I've been able to make contacts in all these other scenes. And when work sends me there, I can do shows, which is really nice. Honestly, moving back from Chicago, I do a lot less open mics. I do a lot less shows, but the shows I do are really meaningful to me and they're with people I want to work with. So I feel like that makes up for it.
Well, I mean, you're fooling me then, because whenever I see you on social media, I feel like you're always all over the country doing stuff and just, I mean, being amazingly funny for one thing, but also you're right that that notion, and I think that kind of translates into any job, but really, yeah, comedians, if you're listening to this, because I know we have a huge comedy base listening to this show all the time, but like, if you show up to the place and you're cool and you're easy to work with and you don't cause trouble, you will get spots the next time you come through so easy because they'll remember you as a cool person, and you should also be funny, which Kristen absolutely is, but.
Thank you. You flatter me.
What was that?
You flatter me.
Oh, you know, I can't help it. I got to compliment the people I care about.
Thank you.
Kristen, if anyone's interested in becoming a part of the union, if they're a teacher, if they are interested in knowing more about what you do, where can they go to find out information about WEAC?
Yeah, I would say if you're an educator or a paraprofessional, secretary, custodian, anything of that nature, you can jump on WEAC.org and look at Become a Member. It also has a lot of great tabs on things we're working on, things that we're doing throughout the state. And, you know, if you don't work in education, but you want a union, I would suggest the Emergency Workplace Organizing Committee. They've got a really great website that walks people through how to form a union and create workplace democracy.
Well, that's great. Kristen, if people want to get to know more about you as far as your comedy goes, where can they find you?
Oh, you can go to kristenlighty.com. I actually just put out a new zine called Union Town, and that is kind of reflections on working in organized labor for the past 15 years. And my friend Whitney Wasson, they illustrated it. Whitney is amazing. We were talking about it and the project, and they were like, I really want to do it in the style of Busy Town, and I really want to draw you as a badger. And I was like, yes, run with it.
You know what? Go for it. I won't tell you how to art, Whitney.
Yeah, you art how you art. So that zine is out, and then my album is available on green vinyl, which I love.
I have a copy at home right now, so you want to be like me and be cool, kids. Get yourself a copy of Disassociation Vacation from the very funny, the very powerful Kristen Lighty. Thank you, Kristen, so much for being a part of the show today. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me. Honored to be here. Honored to talk about the labor movement and comedy with you.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. Have a wonderful Labor Day, Kristen. Be safe, be amazing, and talk to you soon.
Yes.
Big thanks to Kristen Lighty for sitting down and taking the time with me to talk. Big thanks to Kristen Lighty for taking time out of her day and sitting down and having a discussion about the importance of the teachers union and her work she does for them. Don't forget, folks, we'll be back tomorrow at our regular time, 10 a.m. to noon. As always, I am Greg Box sitting in for Jane Matinere. We've got some great interviews coming up. Stay tuned. You're listening to the Labor Day edition of Matinere on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. Please enjoy this interview that I conducted with Brian Kelly last week on Matinere on Air, and happy Labor Day. Good morning. Welcome back to Matinere on Air. My name is Greg Box, sitting in for Jane Matinere, who is on vacation. We got fancy Brian Kelly across from me on the table. He's my guest co-host this morning, and we also have the board lord, Calvin B. How you doing, Calvin?
I'm doing fantastic, Greg.
That's good. I'm always happy when Calvin's doing well, because I don't want him to do bad on my watch.
Yeah, and he does a great job.
He does!
So having him in a good mood is a really good thing.
I buy him fantasy books. I'm like, here, just be my friend. That's what I do.
That's one of my favorite things
My love with people. But we love you. We'd love to hear from you, folks. As we said earlier before, we're going to be talking a little bit about Brian's experience in the union. If you have union experience, union comments, questions, anything like that, give us a call. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. We'd love to hear from you. Drop a comment on the live stream. Give us a text. Either way, we'd love to hear from you. By the way, Sherry from HorrorCon, one of our biggest fans. Good morning, Greg and Calvin and friends. And then follows it up with, hi, Fancy Brian.
Hi, Sherry. She says hi every day. And
she
I don't
does. Always, to every show.
I don't always get to say hi back. And I just want to say hi, hello, how are you? And times 1,000, you're great, Sherry.
Yes, exactly. I feel the exact same way. I'm like, oh, Sherry's right there. Hello, Sherry.
I'm hugging you with my words.
There we go. Now, Brian, I talked to you earlier about this, and I said, do you have any thoughts on unions, a union experience? And you just looked at me, yeah, I'm in a union. I said, what union? Brian, what union are you in?
I've been a proud SAG member since 2001.
Now, we have talked a lot about farmers unions and teachers unions and, you know, those unions that really affect Wisconsin. And I don't know if I've ever, I've talked to SAG members, but I've never had a conversation with someone about SAG. Tell us about SAG.
SAG is the Screen Actors Guild. It's now SAG-AFTRA. It used to be separate. It was SAG, and then there was AFTRA, and they merged right about the time that I joined the union.
Okay.
I was a part of SAG, and then I, by de facto, became a part of AFTRA, the American Federation of Theater and Radio Artists. So it basically encompasses performers and the entertainment industry, make sure that we don't get taken advantage of, because I always say, when we talk about Harvey Weinstein and horrible things, absolutely horrible things, but the metaphor also extends to me because I would have done any of that too to become a star at one point in my life too. And so these union, and I'm using that as an extreme example, but the idea is that actors themselves just want to be on stage.
Yeah.
We just want to create. And I didn't get into it because of the money. If I went into it because of the money, I'd be a fool because you just really don't. But the union allows people to actually make money at it and use it as an art form. Most people in Chicago I know are union carrying members, and they're also part of the stage union as well. Mm-hmm. They do plays, and then they sometimes supplement that with their stage stuff and or for their film stuff, and both are protected by unions, and that makes sure that you're not there for more than 8 hours. You're not there, and if you do, you get paid correctly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's prohibitive for someone to do a marathon session because after 8 hours you get overtime, after 12 hours you get time and a half, after 16 hours you get a day every hour. It's amazing.
Wow.
And these are all negotiated. But these are also things like our entire, you may have noticed that the writer's strike happened. There was also a SAG strike at the same time. This is because, I'm sorry, there's a lot of things going on. So I'm fire hosing right now. The whole issue is that our entire medium is changing. As you know, us radio artists are now we're on live stream. We're on camera. So
this wasn't a part of my deal.
Yeah. So we're on camera right now.
Yeah.
So the entire medium is changing, and the way people get paid is changing too. I don't know if you noticed this, but cable is going away. It's going to be going away.
They always say that, but
it's slowly going away.
Yeah.
I promise you this. And there's less roles in sitcoms. There's less roles on regular TV shows because they make one-offs. They make whole seasons. They produce things. The way things are made is different. And without a union negotiating and being on top of that, we're going to easily get taken advantage of, because up until this point, it was like straight up buyouts for things that are online. Or if a movie was made for an online presence, but also there's no ticket sales attached to that anymore. So you're not making as much money on that end, but you're making money on the advertising streaming end. So it's protecting you. On top of that, every single big production, every single movie, we're talking about music videos. If they are of any sort of budget whatsoever, you are incorporating not just the SAG unions, you're incorporating the Writers Guild, you're incorporating the Directors Guild, and you're also incorporating Yahtzee, which is all of the trades.
Yeah.
You got every single movie that has a union on it has tradespeople. Lots of tradespeople.
And you want to know how many? Stick around for the end of a movie. It's like if you're watching a Marvel movie, just wait for the end before the post credits come on. You're going to see all of these logos, anywhere between 5 to 6 to 7. And that represents all of the unions who are working on that production, who are all protected by contracts that are defended by their union higher ups too. I mean, that's what I wanted to talk about too, is like, I feel like, when it comes to SAG-AFTRA or WGA or WDA, there can be a disconnect because, you know, I mean, I'm Wisconsin. That's Hollywood. What does that have to do with me? But there has something to do with us, because when a union is strong, no matter what they do, it influences the power for other unions.
For
so
sure.
if you know, maybe there's a teachers union who says like, oh my gosh, look at what the writers are doing in Hollywood right now. They are striking, and maybe we can talk to them, work with them, or at least like copycat some of the things they're doing to help us build a stronger presence and a better contract for our people. So, you know, it's not just about Hollywood versus the regular people. It's about what you do, Brian Kelly, sitting in front of me, a guy I can text on the phone right now and say, hey, what's going on? You are in the Screen Actors Guild, and that union has power, and it's important that it does. And that it protects you, especially someone like you. And I don't mean to, I don't want to insult you, but like,
you
have a Brad Pitt or a Julia Roberts or a Denzel Washington or anybody else. They not only have their union, but they have their lawyers, their publicists. Mm-hmm. They have an army of people who can protect them, whereas you don't have those things at your disposal. So that union is there to help you specifically.
Yeah. And I also want to add on those people, that the Tom Hanks, the Brad Pitts, them getting a whole bunch of money means that my union gets a whole bunch of money.
Yeah.
Because they contribute, our contributions are solely based on how much we make.
Oh, really?
So I mean, there's a minimum.
Yeah.
But there are years when I make a whole bunch of money doing some movies and stuff that I pay more in dues. So that means that Tom Hanks pays a whole bunch of dues.
So the question I have for you is, let's say, you know, 2023 was a great year. You worked on a bunch of projects, made X. So you give a percentage of X. Let's say 2024, not so much. Let's say you actually, like, you get hurt or sick and you can't work the whole year. Does the union say to you, well, you didn't pay this year, so you're out? Or they say, because of extenuating circumstances.
Fun fact. That's exactly happening now. And I'm behind on my dues. And
fancy Brian Kelly.
Yeah, I know. I have to, guys, I'm going to pay them. Yeah. I've never not paid them. But they are extremely very, they're very flexible and understanding.
Yeah.
And especially with the 20-year history, they're pretty cool with me. But they also, you know, have programs, because our union is strong and our union is well-funded. They have programs for people who don't get, you know, who don't get the work, or have a rough year, who have problems. They will help you. They have direct programs to help you out. It's pretty awesome. I have support everywhere I go, and there's union offices all over the place.
If you're just joining us right now, I'm talking to our fancy co-host this morning, Mr. Fancy Brian Kelly. He's talking to us about his experience in the union, specifically SAG-AFTRA, Screen Actors Guild. And what did AFTRA stand for again?
American Federation of Theater and Radio Artists.
And we're talking about the importance of union, because we have Labor Day weekend coming up, and we, you know, we here at Civic Media and Matt and Aaron Air, we recognize and love the work that unions do for the people. And I'm wondering, Brian, like, you know, when you see a, I guess, I don't want to say anti-union, well, no, anti-union sentiment, like the typical, you know, rhetoric of people who are against the unions. As a union member who is not, like, you know, a trucker, a teamster, or a teacher, you know, that has to raise your hackles too, because it's, you know, you're a union guy, and what they generally say isn't true either.
Not all the time. Because a lot of the sentiment now is generalized, but most of those people who have those anti-union sentiments have specific stories that are specific to the union they were a part of that completely snowballed them.
Yeah.
And I don't want to discount their experience of that union, because I'm not telling you that all unions have been perfect, and boy, have there been some issues.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's been some corruption, but I think there's been some corruption in a lot of different places. But that's also why union membership and union participation is extremely important. It's, you going to those union meetings are boring. They're boring. And my buddy's he is a secretary in the firefighters union back in Chicago. And he's like, getting these people to do anything is like pulling teeth. He's like, I'm trying to help you. Yeah. I'm literally trying to help you. And they're like, but meh. And it can be a very trying and hard thing for people to experience. So a lot of times people have negative experiences of unions. And I can understand that, but I'm going to tell you that no matter what, you're better off for having a union backing you, because you don't have your own. I can't go to a movie set and say, hey, I can't do this. But if I call my union rep and say, hey, they're doing this to me, that union rep is probably usually on set. But if not, they can go and back me up. And I have the backing of an entire mountain of people to go and take care of me. It's a lot more, it's a lot more fun on set too, because you know exactly where what your job is. You're not being asked to do things you're not normally supposed to do. Yeah. Everybody has their assigned roles. And again, although it's weird that I can't move a chair, and like, cause I'm a big dude and I want to move everything and help people out.
Yeah.
It also covers liability. Cause if I decide to strain myself moving that chair, who let that person have that chair? It's defining, it helps, and it protects you.
Yeah.
And it feels protective.
And those are all through lines that apply to all the unions.
Yes.
Discussions I've been having, which is a fantastic thing. We're going to throw it to the phones. Jack from Merrimack is on lines right now. What say you, our friend Jack?
Well, for about 40 years, I was a member of the, they call it the Teachers Union, Wisconsin Education Association, and also the National Education Association. This is probably, the NEA and WA were two of the most democratic organizations I have ever seen. I was elected a couple of times to be a delegate One year I was in Washington, D.C. and actually spoke as just an ordinary teacher. I wasn't at the time. I had been vice president of our local, and I had, you know, I'd been active in our local politics. But I got to speak basically in front of a group of 10,000 teachers regarding a topic of science and science education. I won't go into the detail, but it was a great organization to be part of. So was the WEA until Act 10 came along.
Yes,
and
of course.
And yeah. When that essentially destroyed that unit, the teachers' organizations, by basically saying, yep, the only thing you can really negotiate for is your salary. Conditions of employment, nah. Benefits, no. So what happened then was that teachers were actually required, I think, in that particular law to pay more for, in many cases, more for our benefits, dental and medical insurance. Basically had no control over our conditions of employment. So all of a sudden, there were morning meetings that started at an hour before school started, which was normally when I got there for prep time.
Yeah, Jack, I'm sorry to cut you off, buddy. There, we're coming up against a break, but I appreciate your calling and letting us know. We will be covering that on Monday with our pre-recorded episode with my interview with Kristen Leidy, talking about WEAC, NEA, and what Act 10 and 32 did to the teachers. Jack, thank you very much. I appreciate it. You're listening to Matt and Air on Air. My name is Greg Bach, and you are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay close. Good morning. Welcome back to Matt and Air on Air. This is Greg Bach sitting in for Jane Matt and Air, who is on vacation, and I'm sitting next to Fancy Brian Kelly, who is my guest co-host this morning. On the boards is Captain Boardlord himself. That's right. I updated you to Captain Boardlord. That is a promotion. And I don't know if they would be upset, but we could just let that song play for the next 6 minutes.
Yeah, that's fine.
You know,
it's slap it a BS.
Slap it a BS.
Yeah.
We are talking about unions with Brian Kelly, who is a member of SAG-AFTRA, talking about not just the uniqueness of being a part of the Screen Actors Guild, but also how his experiences in that union translates to what would be considered like blue collar unions, you know, the teachers, Teamsters, how the actions within one can help all and create more and, you know, protect the working people, protect the working class, something politicians love to talk about, the working class, the middle class. It's just, it's all for them until they have to vote on a bill, which gives them tax breaks and ability to buy up stocks or before we know about it. We got a text on the from Anne listening to WAUK saying, unfortunately, Walker destroyed our union and gave more power to the top. And unfortunately, at our district, our superintendent stole money from our small district, greed at the top. Our students suffered, and so did raises to our older staff. A couple of things about that. First of all, Ann, thank you so much for telling us this.
Yep.
We appreciate you reaching out. Jack, I want to just thank you again for calling before. I apologize for cutting you off. Fortunately, we have the hard breaks here at WAUK. But also, if you're interested more on this, the Monday episode we'll be doing will be a pre-recorded. I won't be here. Calvin won't be here doing the show with me. We're going to have different conversations. And one of the conversations I have right up top of the show is with Kristen Leidy, who is an organizing director for WEAC, which is Wisconsin Educational Association Council. And she talks about this in greater detail as far as Act 10 and 32. And, you know, the devastation it caused, the fact that teachers can only negotiate salaries, and that is to inflation. There's a little, you know, hullabaloo in there as well, but also, you know, a little bit of a bright spot on the horizon as well, possibly with, especially with, you know, flip governorship, flip Supreme Court, Fairer Maps. So you want to check out that episode. That's going to be same time, 10 a.m. to noon, but it's going to be all new and old interviews with union individuals talking about their experiences in the union and helping you to appreciate those on Labor Day. So we were talking about SAG-AFTRA, and you know, I asked you before, Brian, that with regard to naysayers and anti-union sentiment, I say that, and I want to be honest with everyone. My father was a Teamster. He was a union truck driver, and he didn't really like it. Mm-hmm. He wasn't a fan, and he was not that he wasn't a fan of the people who worked at the union. He just felt like, I come in, I do my work, I go home, and that's it. I should be getting paid. You know, he felt like he had like those cliched notions of a union. And I, in turn, growing up, felt that way about them. Not because I was very educated on the matter, just because my dad said so.
Yeah. That's a lot of people.
And it took me a long...
Especially in this city as well.
Yeah, and it took me a long, long time to get out of that mode of thing. I still believe that hard work deserves correct pay, and I believe that hard work deserves, you know, being felt like you are valued. But I also know now that when you're in a union, your hard work can get you paid, and you have someone behind you, an advocate. That's important.
I guess that's the key about unions, is that a lot of the benefits are inherent and not actively felt. Yeah. Meaning that the reason that you're making the money that you make and the money that you can make is because your union is strong and demands that wages. Mm-hmm. But they're not actively doing so. And so when you get like a 25-cent raise, it seems like, oh, great, they did something. But they've been fighting for that for like years, and you on your own would not be able to have possibly gotten that. And by the way, that you got that for everybody you work with.
Yeah.
Makes it easier for you to get more employees in. And our caller Jack mentioned Act 10. That destroyed the power of the teachers unions. Over the past 10, 15 years, we've also seen a teacher exodus, and our quality of education has gone down. Mm-hmm. I guarantee you the same people who are pushing for Act 10 are the same people going, why are our schools messed up? And on top of that, and you mentioned the superintendent embezzling some funds or taking some funds, I bet you that you also voted on a bill to add taxes to yourselves to fund your schools more. Yeah. Because people do that around this state almost everywhere.
And we talked about that with Kristen Lighty as well. And yeah. And honestly, I made mention, and I'll give you a preview. I used to work in I worked in the public sector in small government. I worked in Racine. I worked for the city hall. And when Act 10 and 32 came down, two things happened. It affected us as well. It decimated the teachers, and that was the main focus, as it should have been. But for me, I got a 5.2% pay cut because of it. They gave me a 2.6% raise to stem the tide, quote unquote, which didn't really help. It was still nearly 5% or 6% pay cut. But then, just like teachers, there was a mass exodus of city employees. They wanted to get out while the getting was good because they didn't know where it was going next.
Yep.
Because the unions were basically being gutted. And so they're like, well, I've got 40 years in. I'm going to take my lifetime health insurance. I'm going to take my pension before you guys start to reinvest it in private funds and things like that. So it's, even though I wasn't a union member at that job, I still was protected in a way.
Yeah.
And they told me that. It's like, your job is a non-rev job because you work where you work, but you still have the protections. When we fight for us, we're fighting for you as well. I was very lucky. And I think that's one of my old ways of the union started to melt away. I'm like, oh, this is actually important and good.
When they're active and they're present, you really don't feel them as much.
Yeah.
But when they're pulled away, sure as hell you feel they're missing.
And you feel it when they're fighting for you, too.
Yes, for sure.
They're waiting for the moment. And when you call them, they're there, and they're always there to help.
I want to also bring up the, you know, the deaths in the prisons that have, I mean, we just locked up a warden for causing death in prisons. A lot of that was because, guess what? Nobody wants to work for the state anymore, and prison guards are state employees, and they get paid for crap. And half the reason why the inmates are on 23-hour lockdowns is because they don't have enough employees.
Yeah.
So you can almost say that Act 10 directly caused the deaths of all those inmates because of negligence, lack of staffing, and lack of support.
And we're going to leave that conversation right there. Thank you, Brian, for talking to me about that. Are you going to stick around in for a little bit longer?
Mommy, I got you.
All right. Fancy Brian Kelly's going to stick around for another segment. When we come back, we're going to be talking about price gouging and corporations who admit to doing it. Go take a break, get some water, get a snack. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay close, stick around. You are amazing.